this last week, we look in particular about this topic of understanding heart change and really what's going on when we see fruit in a person's life. And in the case of, you know, helping people change, quote unquote, negative fruit, and how many times Christ is used in the Gospels. The idea of the fruits is really an indication of what the roots of the tree are. What we're understanding, our context of what the roots are, that's your heart. And so helping people and addressing what's really going on in the heart and the issues that are in the heart. What a person does, in other words, what their behaviors are, is not caused by the situations or the people that are around us, that are in our lives. Instead, a person's behavior is always caused by our desires and the desires that are in our heart. And the desires aren't inherently wrong. God gives us desires. He created us to have desires and to be desiring people. However, it's the path that we go down and the path that ends up getting us in trouble here. And so I'll just refresh this. This was from last week. But if we examine this path, it will help us understand what's really going on in the life of an individual. It starts out with the desire. Typically, it starts out with something like, I want, and there's nothing wrong with the desire. However, when it leads to the next step here, where it's a demand, I must have. The desire no longer is an expression of love for God and love for other people. It's something like, I can't live without this. So I'm demanding that I must have this thing. And those quickly turn into needs. I will get this. It's something now that's desire is now seen as essential in our lives. I have to have this in my life in order to live a certain way. I'm convinced that I can't live without that thing, whatever that thing is. And then an expectation is that you should, those people around me, you should help me meet that need and get whatever I'm desiring there. And that quickly leads to disappointment, because if those people that are around you don't help you get that, then you're disappointed. And a lot of times it leads to this last point, because you didn't, I'm frustrated at you. I'm annoyed at you. I'm angry at you. And so now you see now that my responses, the fruit, which is what we typically, again, want to address in a person's life. An angry person, what do we want to address? The anger. Gossiping. Address the gossiping. Like, that's not going to fix the problem unless we go all the way back to the desires and the heart that's behind it. And really, what our problem is, the struggle that we're having, the root of the issue here is a matter of worship. What are we worshiping here? And that's where we get the core problem, this core principle, that really is we're worshiping something in the creation more than the creator. And by the way, the creation object that we're a lot of times worshiping is ourselves. And so essentially, like we said here, it's spiritual adultery. We are idolatry and adultery because it's supposed to be worshiping our Father or the Creator, but instead, again, we're taking our eyes off of that and worshiping. So the next question here is, like, what's the solution to this? Like, how can I get lasting change? Because when you talk to somebody, especially somebody, and a Christian typically, when this is addressed in their life, like, you want to change. If I were to ask you, is there something in your life right now, behavior-wise, that you know is wrong, maybe not like a gross sin, but something that you don't like in your heart, do you want to change? People don't sit there and they're like, nah, I'm all right. Like, no, I want to improve this. If I say, do you want to improve your marriage? Everybody's like, yeah, I want to improve my marriage. You want to improve your parenting? Do you want to improve your relationships at work? Do you want to improve this? People want to change, but the thing that, again, that we typically address, though, is the behaviors, and then when those things don't change, we're more frustrated, or we're disappointed, or we're sad, or whatever, but again, we're addressing the wrong things here. So, is there any hope with this? And the understanding and living in the reality, there is hope, but understanding and living in the reality that we've been united with Christ and indwelt by the Holy Spirit, and so this warrior spirit that lives inside of us is there to give us the grace and the help that we need to have heart change that actually will last rather than something that's temporary. This is what we're going to address here in the coming weeks. But before we go on to this again, because most people weren't here, and those that are visiting today, this is going to do you a lot of good in the long run, but I knew we were getting some back that hadn't been here and that will be here in the future. People like examples. I've found, especially as I teach, have taught over the years, my students like examples because they think it's a time for like their brain to relax and it doesn't really matter. That's not the point of examples. The point of examples is, one, for us to be able to share, you know, examples of stuff in a situation, whatever it is, that other people can relate to, but then they also can give us some perspective on things, because again, if you've been in any kind of situation or responsibilities where you're working with people, you will quickly find out that everybody's got the same problems at the heart of it. Those things may manifest themselves a little bit differently, but at its root core, you're really dealing with the same, just several things. It's just getting to that root core. If you're writing something down just to kind of keep things in mind as what we're trying to accomplish here, there's three things that I want you to answer. So I want us to look, we're going to look here in the gospel, and there's a lot of these situations that I've been describing to you where there's a circumstance where a person or people come to Christ and they think that they have one problem, and his response addresses something that's completely different. And a lot of times the people are left looking at him are like, you kind of get the sense that they're like, wait a second, did you hear what I just said? My real problem is this. And essentially he says in different words, like, no, that's not your problem. Your problem is actually this. And you've seen these before, but again, I think it will help in us going through some of these. I'm not going to go through all of them, but you're going to see a situation. So I'm going to ask you, what is just the general situation? What's going on in the story? The second one there, from a human perspective, what appears to be the problem? This is the person that comes to and I'm thirsty or I'm hungry or whatever. And Christ actually replies to them and says to them, no, the heart issue behind what's going on here is this instead. But turn to Matthew 8, 23 through 27. These are all very familiar, so I'm not thinking or acting like this is something brand new that you've never heard before. But I want you to look at this now from this context of us understanding the heart. Because again, I'm not necessarily up here saying this to fix something in your heart. I'm saying we are individually have a responsibility to each other. We were designed to live in a community and to help each other become more like Christ. We are the instruments that God has left here on earth to help with spiritual change in each other's lives. This is not I'm in this on my own type of thing. So I want you, as we read this, to think about how are these situations something that maybe I can identify fruit in somebody else's life and be an instrument of change in their life. There's a lot, like if you haven't been here, that's going to mean that you're going to have to take time with relationships and getting to know people. And there's a lot of groundwork that needs to be made. I'm not just coming up to some random person being like, see this in your life, need to change that. And that's not going to work. That's not going to go over well. Again, I'm hoping that you put this in the context of how can I help others, and maybe these things can enlighten some things to you here. And when he got into the boat, so what's the situation? And when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great storm on the sea, so that the boat was being swamped by the waves. But he was asleep, and they went and woke him, saying, save us, Lord, we are perishing. And he said to them, why are you afraid, O you of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds, and there was a great calm. And the men marveled, saying, what sort of man is this that even the winds and the sea obeyed him? So, situation, what's the situation here?
Stormy sea.
Stormy sea. And so what would you think if you're on that stormy sea? This is our problem and it needs to be fixed, Lord. What are you thinking? The storm stops. By the way, I know you're staring at me like we just read it. Don't you know? Like, yes, I understand this. But I could also potentially, if I find out a lot about what's going on in your life, I could say, yeah, that's your problem. A lot of times it's very obvious to us what we, again, think our problem is. So the situation is you have the disciples here on the stormy seas, and what's the solution to their problem? Storm, stop. Fix my problem so that we can go on serving the way that we need to and, you know, healing people and making their lives better, which is also wrong. Very temporal view. Okay, so in our case here, or the disciples' case, the easy solution is to stop the storm and everything will get better. But instead, what does he address here? Right, their lack of trust. Their lack of faith. And we know, because we have the context of this long term, is that going to be something that needs to be addressed in the lives of these 12 men? For them to accomplish what he is going to ask them to do, a storm on the sea is the least of their problems. But in this case, it looks like a really big problem in their life. It looks like one thing, but in the end, we're dealing with the hard issue of trust, trusting that God will meet their needs, will in this case give them the protection that they need so that they can do the things that he's called them to do. Those words ever been needed in your life? Individual, why don't you trust God in this situation that looks like it's a big deal, but really he's just trying to grow your trust because you've got bigger things that are coming on down the road. Looking back in your life, ever had a situation like that? Right? We all shake our heads, especially those of us that are older. what's coming behind you? Children, grandchildren, especially, that don't have that context. And so the storm looks like a very big deal in their life right now. But the storm's not the thing that's the matter. You'll get through the storm, son, daughter. God's growing you for something bigger. Okay, next one there, Matthew 16, 21 through 23. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. But he turned and said unto Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men. What's the situation here? Okay, fearful, maybe about what's going on, because this is a man who they've probably grown to love. Temporal view, I would definitely go with that one, yeah. Okay, we'll come back to that one. Anything else you can think of? Who in their minds, or how are they viewing Christ? Who do they think that he is? Like miracles, like he's healing people and giving them life. He's feeding people. He's doing a lot of things for them. And now you're going to tell me that you're going to die? But wait a second here. You have such a great ministry. Why wouldn't God keep you alive for as long as possible? I would ask people in this room, not to bring up hurts, but is somebody in your life who has been a spiritual beacon for you passed too early? But the question here that I would say is, you know, what does Jesus address? God's plan, not man's plan, right? You know, we're accomplishing all these things and these great things are being done, and you're saying that this is going to happen instead. I go down to Mark 10, 17 through 23. And when he was gone forth into the way, there came one running and kneeled to him and asked, Good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life? And Jesus said unto him, Why callest me good? There is none good but one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not kill. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Defraud not. Honor thy father and mother. And he answered and said unto them, said unto him, Master, all these things I have observed from my youth. Then Jesus, beholding him, loved him, and said unto him, One thing thou lackest, go thy way, sell whatsoever thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven. And come, take up your cross, and follow me. And he was sad at that saying, and he went away grieved, for he had great possessions. The rich young man comes, and I mean, in all appearances, like, he has great intent. You have somebody that comes like this, that's willing to help, and Christ actually addresses something that he knows going on instead, because he knows that he's rich, and says, instead, go and sell all that you have. And what does that action show about the young man? Yeah, he values more his possessions than he does about serving. I won't ask you this, because I wouldn't want somebody asking me this out loud. But how many of you value your possessions really more than you value what God has called us to do, or value God in general? When you see a situation in your life or in somebody else's life, it does take some spiritual maturity and even self-awareness in our own hearts to stop and really ask ourselves the question, what is actually going on in my heart right now? Because what you will often find is, if you just quickly, just what's the problem here, you're going to blame the problem or attribute the problem, whatever it is, to nothing more than a situation or to a person around you. When I'm having a rough day, it's my wife's fault, my kid's fault. On Sunday morning or Saturday night when I'm finishing up preparations for this, yesterday was my fault and my heart's fault. Ask God. Maybe you don't see it right away. What's really my heart here? What's really my struggle here? But addressing those things is what's going to lead to lasting change. Addressing that I get frustrated when my kids don't do what I say is not going to fix the situation. So understanding the heart is really where we have to start here. So that leads us to this next chapter here, is chapter 5, serving as an instrument of change in the lives of others. And really starting by the overall concept here that we want to look at is following our wonderful counselor as he calls us. Again, we're his representatives here. So how should we respond as his ministers in a way that please him and reflect him, and, you know, we're his mouthpiece? Again, the instrument concept here. But the overall concept is, for effective personal ministry to be effective, it seeks to be part of what the Lord is doing in the lives of others by modeling the way he has worked in us. This is following what God has said, and obviously he shows us how he acts towards us, not just in the way he acts towards us in just our daily lives, but in what he says in his word. So it puts on us, again, the onus of knowing what his word is so that we can respond to other people the way that he responds to us. I must examine the way I seek to stimulate change in those around me. In other words, are the things that I'm doing consistent with the examples of Christ, the wonderful counselor? And then in relationship to other people, I must think redemptively about my relationships. In other words, I'm always looking for opportunities that he's given me to be a part of work in the change of other people. By the way, I think it's important for us to mention this, but when we talk about helping other people and personal change, especially when we talk about counseling, people think that is in the formal and professional realm only. In other words, I'm not qualified to do this. And when we make those conclusions, there's two things that are the result of that. The first is that the Bible doesn't say enough about whatever situations are that are going on in that person's life for us to actually help somebody who's struggling, which is incorrect. And the second one is that if that's the case, the average Christian doesn't really have what they need to, or they don't have any business in trying to really help somebody else change because I'm not qualified to do that. And that's incorrect as well. This concept here of how we're supposed to behave or what we're supposed to be doing in the lives of other people is the idea, the bigger picture here, that we are called to be ambassadors in the lives of other people. If I were to ask you, what does it mean to be an ambassador? What are some things that I'm going to get? Okay, a representative. We think of ambassadors in the context of the political realm. When you are as an ambassador speaking on behalf, who are you speaking for? Your country. It's as if that leader of that country is saying those words. That ambassador is not saying words on their own. Like, oh, well, that was just the ambassador talking. When you speak on behalf of whoever you are representing. And I think when we think about it, I wouldn't even say for that country. I would put it because it makes it a little bit more powerful when you say you are speaking on behalf of the president. I better be careful what I say here. Or I better make sure that I know what I'm saying here. Boy, that would stop a lot of us from being counselors in the lives of other people. Like here, there's some things that I've been saying here. Let me give you some of my opinions on things. That would eliminate a lot of that. Now, if I'm an ambassador of Christ, I'm thinking, oh man, I better know what he says in his word about this situation before I just start spouting off. Because you don't want the president coming back, if you're the ambassador, to the whatever country and saying, what in the world were you saying there? That's not at all what we're thinking. Now you've got a whole issue of diplomacy between two countries. With us being ambassadors, in essence here, our work here is, first of all, for us, we're representing the message of the king. That's really like, what am I supposed to be communicating to this person in this situation, is really what I'm talking about here. What's the message that I'm supposed to be communicating to them? What is the essence behind what's going on, and how does Christ deal biblically with this? An ambassador also represents the methods of the king. This is the how. How does the Lord work change in our lives? I want to work as he has worked. I do this wrong too. I see change that needs to happen in my kid's life or my wife's life, and it's, this is what God's word says. Why aren't you acting like this? Does God deal with you that way? Yet it's okay for us to deal with other people that way in annoyance or frustration, or this is a, I won't look at anybody here. I told you this 100 times. How do you not get this? Does Christ do this with you? I just gave you this verse in the morning, and this is 5 minutes later, and you're talking to your kids this way? He doesn't deal with us that way. So it goes beyond just the message. I think sometimes ambassadors, you know, we get this, I know what the message says, this is what you need right now. That's not how Christ deals with us. So it goes to also the methods that he uses. And then the last one there, it also represents the character. This is really focusing on the why behind it. I want to faithfully represent my king in the attitudes that he has, when he does it, everything that reflects there. When it comes to serving as an instrument of change, I like this picture because it summarizes everything that we've talked about to this point. It's on the left-hand side there, the negative fruit. We see fruit in somebody else's life, or they talk to us about a problem that they're having, or something comes to our attention that needs to be changed. So let me make this practical instead of just talking here in the clouds, but it could be something like they have a broken relationship maybe, or there's fear in their life, anxiety, anger, maybe they're discouraged or depressed. They have a problem with gossip or vengeance. And God allows us through a conversation or just through interacting with that person or being around that person that there is something that needs to change in their life. And on the right-hand side, if you look over there on the right-hand side, to go down first to the bottom right-hand side, we want positive change there. We want positive fruit to be the result. That's the ultimate goal, is for us to be producing, God to be producing, but us to be the instruments and the tools to be helping produce a good harvest in that person's life. And by the way, a good fruit can grow even in bad conditions. Your situation may not change. Your location may not change. The people around you may not change. You may be stuck in the same terrible job with the same terrible boss. But good fruit can still be grown in those situations. However, the top picture there with the Band-Aid, a lot of times we just try to put the Band-Aid over the top of it to fix it. You went with a broken bone. I've got a kid with a broken arm and his bone is sticking out of his skin. I don't go and get a Band-Aid or even a wrap, let's upgrade it from a Band-Aid to a wrap, and wrap their arm and say, oh, all done, fixed. You'll be good to go. It's still broken. There's still things that need to be changed. And as a result, it may have some temporary benefit. It may slow the bleeding down a little bit, but that person's arm's still broken. The natural result is that temporary change that we may see. Okay, I've got my four steps here. When I get angry, Daniel Tiger, some of you have no idea what I'm talking about here. Yesterday, we're listening to this, and I'm listening, and Daniel gets angry. Daniel's an offshoot of Mr. Rogers. Am I getting some people now? Okay, all right, now here I am, okay? So Daniel Tiger's a little kid, so Daniel gets angry. I'm not going to sing you the song, even though I know most of you would like me to sing you the song. But when Daniel gets angry, take a deep breath and count to four. And so Daniel gets angry and takes a deep breath and counts to four. And what happens? At the end of four, you just take a deep gasp and you're still angry again. That's not going to fix the problem, is one, two, three, four steps. The 7 blog posts about how to raise your kids is not going to make your kids turn out perfect. There's heart change that needs to go on there. How does heart change happen? In other words, how do I, as an instrument, operate and help and work out in the life of another person to actually heart change is the result? And that's where we get to the four bubbles at the bottom. Love, know, speak, and do. Next week, we will be talking about those four bubbles and how you, as an instrument, can demonstrate those things and help be the assistance that the person needs to have to affect positive fruit in their lives.